Hello, welcome to Spotlight.
Spotlight, brought to you by the Isle of Man Arts Council.
This evening, as the Isle of Man marks the 80th anniversary of VE Day, we hear how the island will be taking part in a nationwide bell ringing this Thursday. Have a sneak preview of a new exhibition of photographs by island-born wartime photographer Leonard McComb, about to open at the House of Manannan in Peel. And we celebrate this year's Cleveland Medal winner, Ruth Tickle. Remember, do get in touch with any creative artistic endeavours you might be involved in planning, hoping to create, or would really like to put in the spotlight. Poetic, theatrical, musical, literary, ceramic, sculpture, mime, social media, digital, campanology. It's in this week, why not? Lots of others I no doubt don't even know exist. Just email howardcane@maxradio.com or spotlight@maxradio.com if you'd like to be featured, and we'll see what we can do. Be delighted to hear from you. The pealing of bells, rather than the single bell tolling, has for centuries been used to mark a time of joy and celebration, and the ending of the war in Europe, at least in May 1945, must have been a celebration to end all celebrations, in recent times at least. Bells were sounded, horns hooted, bonfires were lit, fireworks set off, and that was just Douglas. Well, tomorrow, as part of the 80th anniversary celebrations of VE Day, the bells of both St George's here in Douglas and the Cathedral over in Peel will be ringing out as part of a celebratory ring taking place right across the British Isles at more or less the same time, and organised by the Central Council of Church Bell Ringers. Ernie DeLee Runciman is the secretary. I asked him when the bells would be ringing out, and also more about the bell ringing scene on the Isle of Man.
Because we would ideally like to ring at the designated time at 6:30, but we've got a minor problem with some people want to go on holiday. So St George's Douglas are ringing at 5:00 and Peel Cathedral are ringing at 6:30 on Thursday evening.
And what will he actually be ringing then? What will actually happen on the day?
Don't know. Depends who
Depends who turns up.
But St George's have 12 bells, and ideally we would like to ring all 12 bells if we can get the help of our friends at Peel Cathedral to come over. And we'll probably ring for about half an hour, and then we'll all decant over to Peel to do the same thing.
And Peel, what, there's 8 bells in Peel, don't there?
Peel have got a ring of 8, yes.
So are they the only, I'm trying to think, are they the only two with multiple bells now on the island?
There is another, they're the only two towers that have traditional full-circle English chain-ringing bells. There is another ring of 8 bells at St Thomas Douglas, but they're played by a keyboard.
Aha, right. So these, when you say them, when you use this English style full circle bell ringing, this is the traditional bell tower. People with the, this is the ones you imagine bell ringing looks like. Yeah.
Some people say it's sometimes described as with rope and wheel, where the bell rings from mouth up round to mouth up again.
Yeah.
In various mathematical combinations.
It always looks incredibly complicated to me. Is it?
No, it's very simple. Very simple, I say, yes.
So what does it actually need to be a bell ringer then?
You have to be vaguely physically fit, i.e. you've got to be able to climb up the stairs to the bell chamber. You've got to be able to count up to 6, and you've got to be able to stretch your hands up over your head.
And it's one of these ones that there is a sort of a risk element if you don't know what you're doing in the bell tower.
Oh yeah, it's one of these things you can't teach yourself to do. You've got to make sure you understand the safety precautions, and you have to have a competent teacher.
Now, just on the VE Day again, like you say, this is part of the Isle of Man's taking part. So bells basically all around the British Isles will be ringing at round about the same time.
About the same time. I've seen some towers ringing in the morning, some towers are ringing at lunchtime, but most towers will probably be ringing about the same time in the evening, yes.
It seems to be quintessentially British, or Manx in our case, here on the Isle of Man bell ringing. Is it still popular? Is it a dying art? How do you feel?
No. Well, We are concerned, like any of these sports, about the age profile of the ringers. And we have, in the Central Council of Church Bell Ringers, started an initiative called Ringing 2030, where we want to make sure we have enough ringers in 5 years' time to be able to ring all the bells. And we are proceeding very nicely with that. We have started the Young Change Ringers Association. There's a national competition for young ringers. On Sunday, I've actually got a meeting with a number of university societies where, for bell ringing for undergraduate students. So, wow. Yes, so it is coming up.
And how is it on the Isle of Man? Is there interest in the Isle of Man, or is there new blood coming in?
There is. I personally at St George's have got 1, 2, 3 people I'm training up. I think there's 2 being trained up at Peel, but we are always keen to see more people.
That's awesome,
always
way,
keen to see more people, always keen to show off what we do up the tower.
And speaking of which, I think on the 8th, so on the VE Day, the Thursday, the 8th of May, there's an invite to sort of members of the press to come along and sort of see it in action, as it were.
Oh, yes, please do, yes.
Yeah, and I noticed when we were talking there, you mentioned that the sort of sport, is it an art or is it a sport? How is it qualified? Well, what's it qualified as, do you think?
The definition which has been going around for the last 100 years, they call it the exercise.
Exercise.
The exercise. Is it an art? Is it a sport? Some people want to classify it as a sport. And quite funny, they wanted us to get Sports Council recognition on this. And we looked into it and we came across a number of stumbling blocks in that we would have to have a drug testing policy. So we're just waving it as it is, but some people say it's an art, some people say it's a sport, yes.
And then there's all the various, I mean, they used to do sort of bells on a Sunday on Radio 4, all these different peals you can do. I mean, are they sort of learnt by off sort of off the top of your head? Do you have things in front of you? If you're doing a long ring, is there sort of patterns you follow? Or do you have to learn it all in advance?
You have to learn this in advance. You can't. It's one of these things you can't actually ring the bell and look at the music at the same time. So you learn it in advance, but it follows mathematical principles, so you're not actually learning it, all the individual numbers. Yes,
there's logic to it, isn't
there? There is logic to it. Methods can be defined mathematically, and all our method databases are now generated by computer.
Wow.
Yes,
like everything, I suppose.
Yes, the mathematics behind it is quite complicated.
Yes, I could believe that.
Yes.
So people thinking, well, you know, I'm fairly fit. I like the sound of bells. I'm not too bad at maths. There are practice nights. How, you know, if they want to get involved and get along and sort of take up and see if they like bell ringing, how do they go about that?
Well, Peel practice on a Friday night. We at Douglas practice on a Tuesday. The easiest way is probably just search. I did it, just checked it before I came up. If you search Isle of Man Bell Ringers or Manx Bell Ringers on the internet, the first 2 items come up are the websites for the 2 towers.
Brilliant. Well, yes. We look forward to this. So Thursday the 8th of May, so St George's, 5 p.m. And how long will that go on for? That will go on for?
Well, we've got to give ourselves time to get to
down Peel, to Peel.
So probably 5 to 5:45.
Right.
Yes.
And then Peel down at the cathedral with 8 bells, 6:30 then for another 10, 15 minutes or so.
Probably half an hour or so,
half an hour, a bit longer down at Peel. Excellent. And it's great. It's lovely that the Isle of Man's actually taking part.
And one thing I want to talk about is the social life that goes with it as well.
Oh, that's even better.
That's even better. It's our practice night tonight at St George's. So practice night tends to be in 2 parts. One part up the town, the other part in another local establishment. But you've got friends all over the world, all over the place. I used to work for Marconi, and I used to go away for work quite often. And what do you do to entertain yourselves in the evenings? Well, I'd just go and find a local bell tower.
Great.
And go and join them, and then go and join them in the pub afterwards.
A great sound, bells ringing like that are lovely to feature bell ringing here on Spotlight. Why don't you give it a go? Ernie would be delighted to hear from you. Just check out Isle of Man Bell Ringers online, and you might well be helping to keep an ancient tradition alive, to say nothing of the post-ring socialising in the pub. Sounds good to me. Lovely to hear such a social activity. One can only hope that all whiskey drinkers, and when they go to the pub, they order a large round of Bells.
Spotlight. Brought to you by the Isle of Man Arts Council.
We'll stay with the VE theme, as a new exhibition is about to open over in the House of Mananan. Lennon McComb was one of the Isle of Man's most successful photographers, forging a career with Life magazine and producing some of the 20th century's most iconic images. However, his career began amid the chaos and destruction of the Second World War. To mark the 80th anniversary of VE Day, Mag's National Heritage has worked with Leonard's family to create an exhibition of his war photography entitled Leonard McComb Through the Lens of War. I met up with curator Matthew Richardson as he was putting the final touches to the exhibition and asked him to explain a little more about the photographer himself.
He was born on the Isle of Man, born in Port Erin in 1923, quite a lot of people know about his work. He was a war photographer during the Second World War, but after that, the strength of his work got him a job offer from Life magazine, and he relocated to the United States, to New York, where he spent the rest of his life. So although he was known about in the island to people of a certain generation, perhaps younger people might not be familiar with his work. So we've been fortunate that through the good offices of Isle of Man Post, we were able to make contact with the Leonard's family, who have this enormous archive of his work, and very, very generously allowed us to use a selection here, which makes a very, very fitting exhibition to mark the anniversary of VE Day.
Is it something you're saying it would be known about and you known about? Did the inspiration come from yourself or the post office or the family?
Well, we tried to stage an exhibition of Leonard's work a few times over the years. We'd known about him. We actually have some of his work in our archive at the Manx Museum. But Leonard, during his lifetime, the latter years, he sort of closed the door on that chapter of his life, and we didn't get very far. But it was always an aspiration to stage an exhibition of his work. And as I say, we were fortunate that through the good offices of the Isle of Man Post Office, we got an introduction to Leonard's family. And from that, the thing sort of snowballed.
The exhibition's entitled Leonard McComb Through the Lens of War. Are these all war-based pictures?
Yeah, we chose to focus on that chapter of Leonard's career when he was a photojournalist capturing the last days of the Second World War. He was in Normandy while the fighting was still going on. He was in Paris shortly after it was liberated. And then some of the most dramatic pictures of all were when he went to Berlin in the days immediately following VE Day. And the scale of destruction and devastation there is quite breathtaking.
A difficult one to curate, to sort of give a sample and a flavour of his work?
Yeah, I mean, these are very powerful images, you have to say. For me, as a historian who's interested in specialising in the First and Second World Wars, it was really interesting, because it's not often that you encounter an archive that has been virtually forgotten. You know, you sort of come into it fresh. So it was quite a privilege to actually, and quite a challenge as well, to thin down, you know, these thousands of negatives that the family have into the 50 that we've got here in this room. It was quite an exercise to sort of distill that down. But what we've tried to do is to group the pictures into various small topics that kind of lend a sort of a structure to the exhibition.
Let's have a brief walk around then. A picture of the man himself as you're coming through the door there, which actually I rather like that one itself. It's very striking. Him literally in action. He's got a bomber jacket on. He's got his contacts camera held up to his eye, and he just sort of, I don't know, that even that itself, I love that, with the sort of the one eye and the other eye covered.
His face is very telling, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. And then we branch over here to the left. There were a couple here, I think. You were, this work's still in progress. We'll just to one side. So two here.
These two pictures were actually taken during the fighting in Normandy, while the fighting was actually still taking place. And Leonard worked alongside such names as Richard Dimbleby, you know, of the BBC, really big name war correspondents. And he was there capturing, I mean, we have here a German prisoner who's literally just walked off the battlefield, and he's being searched by a British soldier checking his pockets for important papers.
And again, it's all in black and white, obviously, on the battlefield. And it says, yes, a soldier from the British 50th Division searching a German prisoner. His playing cards will probably be returned. And we see him holding the playing cards there. But his documents, useful for intelligence, will not. Normandy, 1944. And the man sort of has his hands up and eyes sort of slightly closed. To the left of this, there's another one in the battlefield, or on the battlefield. A British padre in Normandy following the Allied landings. And again, you sort of forget that, and you see the man in battle fatigues and he's got his tin hat on, but then he's got his dog collar on as well.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, British Padres fought on the front line and some were actually killed. Many people remember that.
Absolutely. The most striking picture, perhaps simply because of its size, is one on the sort of one far end on the left as you come in to the gallery. And this is Germans have been expelled from Silesia arriving at the Anhalter station in Berlin. This one tells a story, doesn't it?
It does. Well, first of all, you've got the station itself, which is absolutely shattered. It's got no roof left on it. But these trains were arriving hourly, full of German civilians who had been driven out from the eastern territories, territories of what became Poland and Czechoslovakia. These are German civilians that had settled there, some in between the wars, some after the German invasion. But they were ruthlessly driven out back to Germany in what was effectively ethnic cleansing, really, I suppose. And these trains were arriving in Germany by the hour, with people sort of riding on the roofs because they were so full. It's said that the mass movement of people at the end of the Second World War was one of the biggest movements of people in history. You know, people trying to get back to their own country, people being driven out of other countries. Extraordinary.
It is extraordinary, and a very striking picture, like sitting occupying the entire wall at the end. It's difficult, just from a point of view putting it together, is it difficult to actually blow pictures up to this sort of size?
Well, they're good quality negatives. This is the thing about what the material Leonard was using. Those black and white negatives from that era are actually exceedingly sharp and far better, in fact, than what came later with early colour. Mm. Those early colour images of the 70s, say, are far more fuzzy than these later black and whites, which are actually crystal sharp. So you can do something like we've done here and blow them up to wall size.
It is amazing. And yes, again, you need to come and see this one to get the feeling of, well, we've given you a hint of it, but just people spewing out the windows and the roofs, how on earth the roofs of the carriages don't collapse with the number of people on top with their luggage and bags and whatever they could grab hold of. Amazing. We'll just paddle around to the other side of the... It's unusual with the gallery because it's blocked off on one side at the moment. It's quite unusual. You're normally used to going around both sides, and now you go around one side at the moment with this exhibition. And there's pictures here on the other side that we come round again, and just some of the destruction
This
here.
This is extraordinary again. Berlin was rebuilt using largely the bricks from the damaged buildings, and it was done by women. Women cleaned up the bricks. They were called Trümmerfrau and Ruins Women, and they cleaned up the bricks and stacked them ready for reuse, and they were paid in food. Because there was no functioning economy in Berlin at the time. Again, it's an extraordinary image.
It is, yeah. And just, yeah, the stacks of bricks. You can see the women there with sort of buckets and the sort of archetypal knotted, not sheets, are they? They're like almost hankies or the sort of headdresses, yes, they put on around their hair, the headscarves. That's the word I was after. Get there in the end. And then just on the other side here, East meets West. And as you said, there's one picture here, East meets West. Dutch and British troops mingle with Soviet soldiers in Berlin. But
this is the very, very early stages of the Cold War. You know, at the Potsdam Peace Conference, the tensions start to arise between the former allies, which sows the seeds of the Cold War. But you can almost feel that tension between the Russian soldiers and the British soldiers mingling in Berlin in the days following VE Day. It's almost palpable, you know, this sort of wariness that they regard each other.
Absolutely, you can see that, particularly in the central character. He sort of looks, I don't know, his eyes are sort of quite thin, he's looking slightly sideways, and yes, a look of suspicion and maybe mistrust on his face. And just finally, of the quick, brief look around here, one that people will recognise instantly, Winston Churchill with his trademark round glasses on and in his military outfit, which you often see him, you often think of him with his Homburg hat and his black sort of trench coat on. No cigar, but pen in hand, and Winston Churchill, and behind the familiar face of Montgomery at the Potsdam Conference, at which the first signs of division among the Allies begin to emerge, as it says there. And again, Winston sort of pen in hand, looking over, signing the document in front of him. An amazing array. I mean, again, we've just given you a brief taste here of the sort of work you can expect. What is it, as you say, you're a military historian, you're used to looking at lots of pictures and thinking about it. What is it that makes a great picture, do you think, a great photograph?
Leonard McComb had this extraordinary ability to sort of be in the right place at the right time. He specialised in people, and that's what's unique about his work, I feel. He's got an eye for capturing people, and you don't necessarily need a caption with some of these pictures. You can just see what's happening, just by looking at them. So for me, it's been a really, really interesting experience. As I said earlier on, it's not often that you come to an archive that's untouched. you know, and you're sort of looking at it for the and curating an exhibition from it for the first time.
So lots never seen before here.
But they have been seen briefly because the family organised a couple of exhibitions over in Heidelberg, and there was one also in New York. But certainly on the Isle of Man, this is the first time that Leonard's work has been seen in this sort of way.
They really are remarkable, potent photographs. They put you there in that moment, at that time, in the way that only great photographers can. Do get down. It opens on the 9th of May. That's this Friday. It runs right the way through until October. Finally, another Guild Week is over and another Cleveland Medal winner announced. This year, the festival's top honours went to soprano Ruth Tickle. Let's have a little listen to her modern song. Thank you.
So here we are with Ruth Tickle, winner of the Cleveland medal. How do you feel?
I'm very excited and very honoured to have won.
So this will be medal number 3 you've qualified, and also with the highest marks of the festival, 93. Have you been working particularly hard this year for the Guild?
I have. The work started in about October when the syllabus was released, and I started picking songs, and since then really I've been learning the songs and singing them every day if I can. So there is a lot of hard work behind the scenes that goes into learning.
And can you tell us a bit about the song choices that you did?
So Hear Ye Israel from Elijah. I sang the soprano part in Elijah last year and I really enjoyed that song. So and I knew it a bit already, so it's a bit less learning to do. And then Will There Really Be a Morning? We had to pick a living composer, and I spent a whole afternoon on holiday, sat squirreled away in a room listening to YouTube living composer songs, and I heard Will There Really Be a Morning, and I loved it, and I still love it now. It's a brilliant song.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Ruth, for talking to us, and congratulations once again. So you're going to be training hard again this year?
Yeah, maybe next year. You never know.
Congratulations to her. The wonderful accompaniment there from Graham Kirkland. This year's Sheffield Plate, by the way, was won by Parker Kizik singing I'm Learning to Write. You can see more of those interviews on the Manx Radio website. That's about it for now. I'll be back next week when we will hear about some creative and educational events for drummers, a poll that didn't get on this week, and also picturing some teeth. See you then. Whatever you're doing, be creative about it. Hee-moo!